Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. I'm going to continue our look at art, and in particular, the way in which institutions enable and make art alive and bring kind of a real energy to the art scene. Now, today we're at the Balai Sidney Negara, the National Art Gallery, and we're at this exhibition. It's a mid-career survey of the work of artist Ahmad Fuad Osman, the title of which is, At the End of the Day, Even Art is Not Important. Rather provocative title, and to help me understand whether art is in fact important or not important, I have Sanjita Anwar. She is a senior curator at the National Art Gallery, also head of collections and exhibitions. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Sharad, for having us.
Okay, let's begin with Fuad's rather provocative title, right? To suggest that art isn't in fact important. What did he mean by that, do you think? And why did you take this up as a, you know, kind of as a way of kind of, as an entry point for people visiting the show?
Yes, well, the title is truly provocative. That Fuad wants to choose that title for his show did not come just overnight. And for anybody to want to come in and think they can find the answer to that question, it's not happened so soon. Why it is very, very interesting is that Fuad takes you on a journey of immersion, and you admire his gorgeous, thought-provoking pieces, and then he lets go. And it says, he says it's not important. And that is, it is very, very Buddhist. It is very Islam. It is for you to not be truly overwhelmed by the material.
Okay, so kind of a non-attachment.
Come out with the value of what you get from the exhibition.
Ah, right.
You're not to take a painting with you and then you understand what it's about, no.
Right, it's not about possession. It's about investigating your relationship.
What you feel in yourself.
Okay.
Yes.
I think, one of the more mature responses to the art world, right? Not about the valuation of the artwork, not about
touching it,
yeah, or possessing it, or even putting yourself in an Instagram image of it, using it as a background, which I guess happens a lot.
Yeah, right? I'm not saying that Instagrammable paintings are not to be in this exhibition. I think it actually is good for the National Art Gallery when you do that. Yeah, but it's also always a limit to that. Just because Beyoncé and Jay had done that at the Louvre, and after that I heard there were about 1.2 million increase in visitation after that.
Right, yes. So that was an entry point for people to recognize that something special is happening.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about the National Art Gallery. It's been around for a long time. I remember it when it was at the old Majestic Hotel. In fact, I've seen some of Fuad's work then.
It tells us like, of our age when you remember.
Date me. I want to ask you about the present space that we have now.
Yeah,
it's a fabulous space. There's echoes of the Guggenheim and, you know, in the spiral staircase and so on and so forth. What has been your job? What exactly do you do here at the gallery?
Yeah, I'm privileged to have been chosen as a curator since Hotel Majestic, 1995. And where over there I met with Ponwaira when she became my director at the time. And she mentions, Anita, we need help in telling others about art. We need a writer. We need an English-speaking person, she was saying. And we need to communicate better. And how about coming on board? And she wanted to see what else I did and how I talked about art. And since then, we've gone through many, many, many interesting milestones for the National Art Gallery. From the Hotel Majestic, had been given this gift from YTL. You are standing on the gift from YTL Corporation.
It was kind of a swap, wasn't it?
It is, okay. It is, because the Hotel Majestic then has to be handed over to YTL and they have to develop that as a heritage site. That costs money too. So YTL built this building for about 16 months and then we moved in. And our first exhibition was really around 1998. It was for the Queen, Majesty the Queen, to come in to have tea for her Commonwealth party, I must say, a social meeting.
What are the attendance rates for the National Art Gallery? I mean, what is it that you are getting? What do you hope to achieve? And what's your target?
Huh. Well, of course, the target is, you know, you want to go up to millions. You want to be able to say, in a year, we're coming, people are coming in drones, yeah? Mm-hmm. But the reality is we would have, as you know, the students came in, two buses have dropped by in a day, about between 50 to 100 in a day. And when it's a good exhibition, a real blockbuster, like I would say the Mona Lisa, we had 89,000 coming in 1 month.
Right, yeah, so these would be like the crowd pullers, because the Mona Lisa, Leonardo da Vinci, this were actually digital
big
reproductions,
names.
Right, of the art, not the original,
they
right?
They were. So many people said, they're not original. What is the point of going to see that? But it's the first time in your life that you actually get to see 17 paintings of Leonardo da Vinci all in one room, you know? And this, you don't even have to do a thing, it's for free. While the Italian embassy has had to negotiate with about 7 to 8 institutions across the world, you have Poland, you have National Gallery London, you have, of course, Italy and several others, to want to agree to even give you that particular image. Everything's copyrighted, you know? And to have it all produced in full size, exact size, and lighted up so beautifully that you can see the detail, and then explained by the most important Italian curator, whose expertise is in Renaissance art. It's really quite an event, quite a moment, and to have Leonardo even show his codex of the flight of birds in our third floor.
Right, so how much of an impact and how do you measure it? Is it possible? I know there are demands that are made on you from an institutional point of view to show impact, but how do you show impact when things are so ephemeral? I mean, these things are in the mind, in the heart. I mean, how do you show it?
That's a good question. How is impact measured? What outputs, what outcomes, and how would that be measured? Yeah. The impact of the Leonardo, for example, has actually quite immediately we could feel it. There were universities coming in. There were faculties and diverse audiences questioning whether they can actually come and collaborate with us. And there was symposia. One symposia was actually held like within just 2 weeks of organizing. We had 7 universities wanting to talk about Leonardo, and we called this the Leonardo Logics. Well, there's a biologist, there's a medical person, there's also the engineer talking about how he builds bridges and how he's inspired by Leonardo. And you would never dream of them all coming, you know, even one reverend, a reverend wannabe. He spoke about how the Last Supper was really, really a painting that had so much to say beyond what we know. And we actually played music from the bread that was placed on that table of the Last Supper. I bet you didn't know that, the way the bread is placed. There's actually musical notes you can detect from that, and you can actually play.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. We're here at the National Art Gallery of the Balasani Negara, and I'm with Zanjit Anwar. She's a senior curator at the gallery and also head of exhibitions and collections. So we're here in another collection, and this is the work of the late Ismail Zain. The work is entitled, the collection rather, is entitled Amambayang Maksud, or Foreboding Purpose. Zanjit, you know, bringing these, you know, very important in art historical terms, individuals like Ismail Zain, into the kind of public sphere, what kind of conversations were you hoping to excite? I mean, what kind of conversations do you think are important, especially because of the kind of historical context of many of these works are kind of lost to a younger generation of Malaysians?
That's true. This is a very brave exhibition, I must say, presenting something that's produced in the 80s, and for the generation, the millennials may come in and say, what? But it is really a matter of actually meeting up with a technology that the millennials know about, the computer. Now, digital collage is something that has been a phenomenon to Malaysian art history. The fact that Ismail Zain is playing with an iMac in the 80s and producing dot matrix pictures where he's juxtaposed Western and Eastern symbols, and then he writes little ideas, sometimes a Rumi quote, sometimes some poem, and he makes us question. Yeah, the fact that the medium is in computer print should trigger some questioning in the millennial's mind. Otherwise, they should be also encouraged to understand why there's so many works that's presented here. Why is this man given such honor? Just a curiosity of the person.
Right. So one of the things that happens when somebody comes to an art gallery is they'll read a description on the wall, or they might be a...
I wish they don't read it yet.
Yeah, there's a QR code in which they can get some more information. True. But without the kind of conversation that you're having with me now, right, without the ability for me as an audience unfamiliar with this to ask you a follow-up question, can that appreciation deepen? Do you have dozens or individuals in many of art institutions that help that conversation along?
Yes, yes. Truly, we do have guided tours. We must, and it's been on an increase. People have been coming in and saying that they need to have guided tours. And this communication is very important for us, besides the QR code that you see, and people will have to upload information. And our good museum assistants would sometimes come in and help to instigate some questioning and make people want to ask and know more as they ask.
You know, sometimes, you know, the public is demanding of institutions, you know, give me, tell me, show me. The question, of course, is on the part of the public, of the individual coming in, what kind of responsibility do we have? What kind of heavy lifting should we partake in, you know, in order to truly appreciate this art?
Yeah, this heavy lifting, this idea that you really have to be culturally educated, that you have to know and you have to have gone through some experiences, sometimes university background in art, to understand art should not be a hindrance to somebody wanting to enjoy art. I must tell you, Sharad, that my grandmother, she said, when she wanted to understand where I worked, she said, "Oh, lu pergi sekolah gambar." So you see, she already knew that pictures can talk and educate, and we can learn through visual images. It's the visual learning that so naturally comes in all of us, in our culture too. The fact that we choose what color to wear and how we have our artistic decisions is already our visual learning and our visual language that we speak to ourselves.
Right.
So don't read the label, see the pictures, and tease your visual
learning. Okay, what about schools? Are schools preparing young people to appreciate art? Is that history, that art history, in our curriculum, so that, you know, it becomes much more kind of within the mindset of young people that art is important, art has a history, art tells us about the Malaysian journey?
Yes, that's a good question. Schools, they have their own responsibility, and they do try to educate us about art. Schools are sometimes more hung up on the idea that, you know, we need to create more doctors. Therefore, artists, not so many, then we won't send too many of them going to be an architect or whatever else. So there was this policy that we had before, but I'm sure that's changing with the new Minister of Education. Otherwise, I've also noticed it is in the teacher. It is the teacher or the person who engages with the students that would want to make the school any different from another school in appreciating art. The other day, a group of students from a particular school had an education kit where this particular worksheet was given and produced by the teacher herself. There's no question about, "Oh, Balai Seni, can you give us a worksheet? We can work with our students to understand your..." No, the teacher produced the worksheet. And we had many of this self-produced worksheet where there'll be questions. Look at the picture. What does the picture tell you? And all these guiding questions for children, for students.
So the teacher took their own initiative to do this.
That is so important. It takes the person. And don't be thinking that, you know, it cannot be done. It can be done individually.
Right. I know there's some collections of books now on the Malaysian art history. Rahel Joseph and Joko Kathas put together
just a book. Just launched, absolutely.
Right. So, but is there enough? Is there enough, especially in the Malay language, especially looking at not just contemporary art, but also folk art, including Sabah and Sarawak in the conversation about Malaysian art? Is there enough?
There's never enough, Sharad, of course. And it's because of that, I think it does inspire us somewhat. It's the angst of not having enough that wanted to make more, and the language in which this would be engaged in, yeah, for the visual arts and modernism, as well as, you know, the corpus of knowledge is in English. And then how do we get to others who may not be able to access certain titles and certain books in the language that they may not be able to access? So this has to be worked upon, where there has to be schools and non-formal alignments to help translate pieces of works and to actually start people talking about.
Yeah, maybe
it's
even
critical analysis.
Right, Institute Terjemahan Buku,
ITBM
should be doing more work. Okay, we'll take another short break and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me is Anita Anwar. She is a senior curator at Balai Seni Negara, the National Art Gallery. We're here in the exhibition hall titled Media Baru, and it consists of artworks that sort of combine or use digital technologies, would you
That's
say,
right.
and new strategies. So I want to put that aside, and Hasnal Saidon's work is right back there. So just so we don't use artists as backdrop, we take them seriously and give them credit for what they do. I do want to come back to the question of art appreciation that we were talking about earlier. We've had some unfortunate situations where people have vandalized, whether knowingly or unknowingly vandalized artwork. What do you think is the source of that problem? Why is it that people do not respect barriers, they don't respect the instructions that say don't touch? What's happening?
We were really, really upset when there were many of the pieces at the Bakat Muda Zaman, they were touched. Not only that, they were pushed. Some of the installation came down and actually did not break, but they were all over the floor. And one in particular, somebody sat on it in a yoga pose and the mirror is cracked. It was a mirror installation. We wondered if it was partly because we did not have enough signs put up about do not touch or do not this, do not that. We checked, but we have enough signs. So there is communication as to what you should or should not do. You should not be touching the artwork. You should not be sitting on the artwork. You should not have a selfie stick, actually. Museums across the world, they're not allowing selfie sticks anymore. After several cases have been said, where actually one of the person with a selfie stick knocked off a very expensive sculpture and he was taken to court. And this is how serious the matter could be.
Okay,
and
so
this is about museum literacy, maybe?
Okay, museum literacy.
Museum literacy.
Okay.
That people do not quite know how to behave in a museum and you're taken aback by all the wonderful things you see and you go in this, I wanna, but then you have not been formally or maybe your family had not brought you when you were a child to come close up to a wonderful art piece, and you were not really exposed to how you should behave in museum. What are the do's and don'ts in the behavioral modes in the museum? You don't run, you don't speak too loudly because people want to enjoy the particular piece through looking, not necessarily talking loudly and all that. That has to be trained language. I feel.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, just today there were two busloads of kids coming in. Are teachers equipped? Do they themselves understand how to deal with this environment, how to explain to children or even younger people the value of what they're observing and also how they might relate to it, you know, to sit quiet. I mean, Instagramming is fine. And I like you think it does
help the museum when you Instagram and make it. Popular,
but that doesn't satisfy that other part that, you know, art demands, and this bench is a wonderful example. It is
contemplation.
That's right. This is not just resting. This is a moment where you can sit and think about what you are looking at, right?
Truly.
Do the teachers have that? Are they equipped to communicate those dimensions of the experience of going to a gallery?
Yeah, I cannot say for all teachers. I cannot say for sure. But there are teachers who have been equipped for the galleries when I've observed how they bring their kids around, and some of them take an effort to come and step up to the curators and say, am I doing this right? And it's that effort that we really value, that they know that there's always something to learn, and they learn with the students as they come in. And that's something that it takes a person to want to know that they need to ask and they need to step up and do more.
Okay, so it's a big ask for an institution like you.
To
communicate, but you know, you have people coming to you. Is there any effort to kind of go out to the schools to change the way schools are talking and teaching art? So it doesn't just become, you know, can you paint a picture of, you know, oh, your scariest dream or a day in the, you know, on a picnic, all of which is good. You know, we all went through that. It didn't harm us, I don't think. Do you have the resources? Are you being given the resources by government to allow you to help change the conversation within the curriculum?
Yeah, we're very happy that it's not on us alone. We know that there has been efforts to put artists in schools. There's been effort where through the universities, certain artists are then asked to demonstrate how they work, talk about how they think in a classroom area. And there has been efforts from private schools also. And these are all isolated, but they actually balance up to ours too. We do have outreach programs. We do have particular invites to certain schools where we need to talk about what does it mean to appreciate art? What does it mean to be an artist? Even to be a curator now, we're talking about that. To be an art manager one day, should you want to be an art manager, through career counseling. To be an art entrepreneur is also something that we enjoy talking about. Because, as you know, the National Art Gallery now has to push the idea of development, developing the artist's skills, developing his career, developing the ecosystem. It's not enough alone to have artists. You must have art writers, you must have art managers. Otherwise, we would be so lopsided, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. There's another thing, and this is just the structure of Malaysia, right? I know that art galleries like this tend to be in the metropolitan centres of the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that that's the richest and the most populous. But what about, you know, outside of Kuala Lumpur, outside of the Klang Valley, Sabah and Sarawak? Are they well serviced? How do they access these things? Obviously, schools are not going to take a flight over to Kuala Lumpur.
We've been very, very lucky to be given stipend enough from the most recently, the Visit Malaysia Year 2020. They have come to help us for our Road to KL Biennale. We understand whenever we have a big program, we have to decentralize the experience. Yeah, and this decentralizing Biennale, the KL Kuala Lumpur Biennale, effort is through having 1 year before 2020, which is in this year, we go up to schools in Sabah, Sarawak, and various areas, not schools alone, even in areas where they have not even had a chance to understand what art is. And we make programs. We create mural. The latest thing now is having a mural around your environment. And then people then, of course, it's Instagrammable. Sorry. You must have a background and then you go take pictures, yeah? And that's happening in Labuan. That's happening in Kota Kinabalu. That's happening in so many places out there. In Kelantan. Although there was an incident where on that particular mural in Labuan, I was told, another artist came and did really bad graffiti with a political slant.
Oh, okay.
And that happens too. Yeah. The police came, and this is how serious matter can become. Police came, we found out, took details of the person, and this person is asked to answer for what he has did. He's done, sorry. Mm. And from then on, people realize that this is not how you behave. This is not how you treat murals. You may want to be a street artist, but you try, please, be aware of the political sensitivities.
Be respectful, you know,
respectful
of somebody else's work.
Yes.
I do want to say, okay, let's, you know, in the remaining minutes that we have, tell us about, you know, the upcoming exhibitions. I mean, the ones here, the Media Baharu that we've seen, Ahmad Fuad Osman's exhibition and Ismail Zain's exhibition, all wonderful exhibitions. Now, what next for Balai Seni Negara?
Yes. Everybody's asking that, especially when you saw Leonardo da Vinci and they ask, what's next? Are we going to see more? I'm happy to tell you that we're working with the Italian embassy to bring in Raphael. We're also very excited to see Raphael.
This is a Renaissance painter.
Raphael's a Renaissance painter. He has the famous painting, The School of Athens. We have Socrates and Plato in the center. And you even have Michelangelo in the painting, and Hippocrates and all the other thinkers.
Can you bring the original painting?
Again, we cannot bring the original. The insurance would cost us, oh God knows.
A bomb.
Yes, we will be having this very high definition plasma version of it, the actual size, and we will have that particular piece being explained by the best curators from Italy. And there will be experiences that I hope many people can enjoy. Besides that, our local presentations, the main thing would be looking to Kuala Lumpur Biennale 2020.
I must say that, you know, if you're lucky enough to see the original, it's not just the image, it's the texture, the surface of those artworks that are so important to experience, right? And that you can't get with digital
reproduction. You'd be surprised, Sharad.
You can see the texture.
Did you actually look at the detail?
You can?
With this high definition.
Because one of the things I think is wonderful with looking at all this art is that you can get so close to the surface and experience the surface.
Somebody's going to blow the whistle, feed, and security guard's going to catch Sharad in the loop.
No, not touching, just looking. Just looking for fun. Okay, so you're going to, so that's wonderful. So these are the kinds of exhibitions you can help get the public excited.
That's right. And one more. We know how we must create areas where the public would want to take a picture and be safe about taking a picture. So an upcoming show, the My Post, Malaysian posters, will actually talk about why do people like to enjoy posters in a traditional way and also the new way, the future of posting your pictures up and saying something and informing everybody about yourself. So MYPOST is an exhibition you should look forward to.
And when is that happening?
That should happen by the end of this year.
Right, okay, in December. Wonderful. Thank you so much again, Zanita, for being on the show and sharing your expertise and your love for art and this wonderful space that is
Balai Seni. So much more. I wish you'd come again.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll make a date with you. That's all we have for Let's Talk. This has been Sharad Kutin, for Astro Awani at the Balai Seni Negara.